What's up, guys? This is a very special edition of the West Ham Way USA podcast. You're probably used to hearing Tony's voice introducing us this week, but it's just me this week. Tony is in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. By the way, my name is Brawley Darbin. I am in St. Louis, Missouri. Tony Clark normally in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, but he is in London this week. And he was able to go to some amazing matches this week, and he was wanting to tell you guys all about it. Unfortunately, he had some time constraints pop up, and he is unable to join us, so it's just me this week. We still have an amazing episode lined up for you this week. We had former Premier League referee Bobby Madley on for a second time, this time to talk all about VAR. He answered all of your questions that you guys submitted to us. I had a ton of questions for him. We had a mock VAR session where we went over an incident. It was the Mikel Antonio and Sebastian Allaire incident against Southampton where they were both tackled in the area. And he took us through what it would be like if he was the VAR referee in Stockley Park that week. So that was really incredible. He broke down some rules, some laws. We talked about the offsides. I mean, pretty much anything that was had to do with VAR, we discussed it. And quite frankly, it was probably my favorite interview I've done on this podcast. Now, I've done some pretty good ones. We've had Arlo White on. We've had Rebecca Lowe on. We had Bobby Madley on previously. We've had some amazing guests on the show. But I think for me, as far as interesting topics go, this was right up there at the top of the list. And I think it might even give you... I'm not going to say it's going to change your opinion on VAR, because it didn't change my opinion of VAR. Honestly, it hardened it, but this will take, if you have any anger towards the referees or officials, maybe this will ease that anger. I won't spoil the rest of the interview for you, so I think, without further ado, let's send it straight in. Guys, this is Bobby Madley, and I think you're really going to enjoy this. It's his second cap on this podcast. He's refereed an FA Cup final, a championship playoff final, and loads of Premier League games, but now he's got an even more important job. He's the West Ham Way USA VAR consultant. It's Bobby Madley. Thanks for coming on again, pal. How are you doing?
I'm all right, man. Merry Christmas.
Yeah,
very good. Thank you.
Yeah, glad you got the promotion to a VAR consultant now, so I'm glad we could do that for you. High-paying job, you know, it comes with lots of responsibility, but...
Yep, all good fun, mate. All good. This should be interesting.
Yes, it should be. Very interesting. So first off, how are things going in your life? What are you up to these days? Are you still refereeing? What are you doing with your life?
Yeah, I'm still refereeing, mate. I'm still refereeing out in Norway. The season finishes here in November, so obviously you can't referee when it's minus 20 over here, so they play April to November. So yeah, the season's gone well. Really enjoyed being back on the pitch. And yeah, just trying to keep a little bit active now off the pitch, and obviously... having some fun on social media, trying to answer a few questions regarding VAR at the moment. So that's keeping me quite busy as well. So yeah, it's all good. Yeah, thanks.
I've seen you have been very active on social media, trying to, and it seems like people have been targeting you as like you're like the counselor they're venting to about all these issues, and you're trying to talk them off the edge.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't mind, but I finished before VAR actually came into the Premier League.
So, yeah.
But I think I'm the closest they can get to actually any of the referees. So basically I'm just everyone else's punchbag now. So.
Really? That's what it is. I mean, you are as close as any of us can get to having a discussion with a referee, because as we talked about last episode, I mean, you guys are pretty much instructed to stay off social media and don't engage with the public and don't do interviews and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, you really are as close as these people can get. And I think we actually appreciate that. I mean, I know I do. I know you have been a punching bag for some people lately, it seems. But I think the vast majority have been pretty respectful, and they've interacted with you and just asked general questions, and you've answered them very well. So I think people really do appreciate that. And I'm sure you're getting a kick out of it as well.
I enjoy it, mate. I enjoy, you know, just chatting football with fans is good. You know, I'm a football fan like everybody else. Mm. And if I can just open people's eyes a little bit, and I'm not going to sit and defend everything that's happened. And similarly, I'm not going to sit and criticise referees, like I've said before. That's not what I want to do. But if I can give people an insight and just show them this is what the protocol is, this is how it works, this is the thought processes, if it can just help to educate 1%, you know, then it's a step forward in the right direction. So, yeah, it's been good fun. And I do get a little bit. I get, you know, some of it not the best that comes on, but I'm sure it's all lighthearted and meant. And I give a little bit back as well, which is quite good fun to be able to do. So yeah, it's all good, mate.
Good. So I saw you were back over in England recently. Did you get to go to any football matches while you were back home? Did you go to Huddersfield or Ossett or any of those other games?
No, I didn't get to go to Huddersfield. I was going to go watch Ossett actually, but I didn't get to that one either, unfortunately. Mm. I did go watch a friend of mine referee at a club called Thackley, which is, I think, the ninth division.
Okay.
So I went to watch a local game there, which is always good. But yeah, I think I'm back in England maybe at the end of January, so I'm going to try and get to watch. I think Ossett United are away at Runcorn Linnets. It's a huge one, so
okay,
I might try and make the venture over there.
Sweet.
Mate, yeah.
Have you been paying attention, been watching the Premier League this season? Are you aware of what's going on? I mean, obviously you've been talking about VAR with fans, but have you seen most of the major talking points that have been going on this season?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen quite a lot of it. I support a team that's not in the Premier League.
Yeah, that's so right.
If I'm watching Huddersfield, then obviously it's Championship football, right, which is not with VAR, but I mean, yeah, I'm picking up a lot of what's going on in terms of VAR and decisions and some of the criticisms that the referees are getting, you know, are being sort of targeted with. And also, I've been involved in some of the discussions that people have had and a lot of questions regarding whether the protocol of how VAR is used in England compared to other countries should be improved. I think I'm pretty much up to speed with most of the things. There might be the odd incident or the odd decision that I haven't seen, but I mean, I'm pretty sure that I've seen most that I could be able to discuss.
Sure.
Yeah.
So before we just jump into the whole discussions, as we sit here on basically New Year's Eve of 2019, the first half season VAR has been implemented in the Premier League, could you give it a grade from A to F on what do you think, how it's been affected? You as a referee, what would you give VAR as a letter grade as to how good or how poorly it's been run?
I think there's two different questions there. I think how positive it's actually been for football and how it's been run are probably two different questions.
Okay.
How positive it's been for football at the moment, I actually, to be fair, they're probably around the same. I'd throw in there probably about a C.
Okay.
What we saw, take the Chelsea game last week, where there's a free kick given against the attacker, Marcus Alonso.
Yeah.
The VAR overturns that and gives a penalty kick. Penalty kick's a huge decision in a game. Now, that's an honest decision by Anthony Taylor, the referee. He's not purposely made a mistake on that. He just didn't have an angle, for whatever reason, to see that that was a penalty kick. The beauty of VAR is that, had we not have had VAR, that would have been a huge talking point after the game. It would have been controversial. You know, it could have meant a team dropped certain points.
Yeah.
With VAR, we come to the correct outcome. So, in that sense, I can't think of many really big mistakes this season in the Premier League that have not actually been corrected. Okay, we've got some talking points in terms of tight offsides and should they be, but I can't think of many huge errors. Go back to my West Ham-Bournemouth game that we talked about last time. There's been none of them because VAR clears those big incidents.
Totally agree.
So in that sense, it has to be a positive. In terms of how it's being used, the fan experience, I still don't think is good enough. And I think the Premier League probably recognised that, broadly, to be honest.
I hope so.
The experience inside the stadium is still not good enough. There has to be some interaction with fans. And even watching on television, I think the fans people could be engaged so much more. People could be educated while this is happening. So I don't think they'll change it mid-season, because I don't think that's fair to the competition to do that. But I think for the start of next season, why not, you know, play the audio of the conversation? People are interested in hearing what referees say. There's no secret there. You know, this is not a secret conversation between VAR and referee. Mm. They'll have had a season then to perfect that conversation, to make sure they know what they're saying, you know, the protocols of how they discuss it. Let's listen to that next year. I'm as intrigued as anyone else to hear that, to be honest. And I'm sure that would improve the experience for fans as well. So I think it's been positive. I think there are things in there that will still improve. People are throwing this against Spain and Germany and comparing it and saying, why isn't it as good as the MLS? We have to remember these countries have used it for some years now.
Right.
And they had exactly the same teething problems as the Premier League had. To expect the Premier League to say, oh, yeah, but they could watch everybody else and then just implement it, I think that's naive to think that referees can just suddenly change everything they've ever done and then go into a totally different mindset and be perfect.
Sure.
So we've had half a season to see it. I think we'll improve it in the second half of the season. I think it's improved from the start of the season already. They started with a very high bar on decisions.
Yeah.
One weekend, for whatever reason, that bar seemed to be lowered. Mm-hmm. Everybody said it's too low. It's gone back up again. So they're listening. I think they're listening to fans and they're listening to media. So hopefully the second half we'll be talking more positive about it. But while the offside law is as it is, that won't change. There'll still be controversy over that.
Sure. So I want to go back because you talked about a decision in the Chelsea. I can't remember. Who were Chelsea playing in that game?
Tottenham, I think.
Yeah, it was Spurs, wasn't it? And a free kick was actually given the other way by Anthony Taylor, and then the VAR comes in, for those that didn't see it, and VAR came in and overturned that and gave a foul against the goalkeeper. So for those that just, I just wanted to throw that out there for anyone that might have missed that. So that was actually, if you had to compile a video of why VAR is doing good things right now, I think that one would be up there. I think Chelsea against Bournemouth, I believe a couple of weeks ago, there was a goal that Bournemouth scored that was ruled out for offside, but then on the field it was ruled offside, and then it was overturned to a goal. And that, again, that would be another one where I would say, okay, there are positive things that are coming out of this, because I think what we all want is the correct decision at the end of the day. That's what I wanted. I was a big, massive advocate for VAR, and at the end of the day, I think we want the correct decision. But the issue right now where people are getting fed up with it is the offside law, and it's the handball. The handball, whether it's accidental or on purpose, doesn't matter. If it hits your arm, it gets ruled out. And because we've seen that as West Ham fans a few times this season. Mikel Antonio scored twice where it's grazed his hand, where it doesn't seem like he's actually gained an advantage by it hitting his hand, but it's hit his hand, so that's the law, and it's black and white. There's nothing you can do about that. So before we get into the offside handball discussion, I just wanted to briefly ask you. I'm sure you talk with your brother on a regular basis. I'm sure you still have mates who are refereeing in the Premier League that you talk with. Do you have a – I'm not asking you to speak for them or put words in their mouths, but do you have a feel for what they think right now, or the grades that they would give maybe, or some improvements that maybe they think would be – that would help? I don't know. Do you have any feeling from them as to how they feel about it right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about grades. I don't know where they would mark it out of 10 or A to F. I'm not sure on that, genuinely. Obviously, they're training a lot with this constantly. They don't just turn up on a Saturday and do this. The referees meet every 2 weeks, and at those meetings every 2 weeks, they'll go over this. How can we improve it? Look at the individual situations. The hardest thing that people have to realise as well is that because some of this, or a lot of football, is subjective, this is, you know, these are not black and white decisions. Right. Red card tackles, penalty kicks, they're not black and white. So therefore, you not only have to get people who are getting the process right, that they're getting the setting the bar correctly, you also have to get consistency across a group of 18 referees.
Yeah.
You know, so this is not just, if I was VAR, I can't VAR that game just by saying, if I was refereeing, I'd have given it. I've got to look and say, hang on, would the other 17 give this?
Sure.
Because if the other 17 would give it, then it's clear and obvious. If only, you know, 9 of the 8 would give that, that's not clear and obvious.
Okay.
But then it becomes difficult. So because I can look at something and you can look at something, and I can be 100% certain it's a red card, you can be 100% certain it's a yellow card. So in that sense, where does clear and obvious stop? You know, we don't have a room of 17 other referees sat there, take a vote, okay, we'll let the ref know. Yeah, we all think it's red. It's one person's decision.
Okay.
On the pitch and one person's decision off it. So in terms of where the group are, I think they're happy at the moment. I think they're happy where the, you know, where the line is. There's obviously frustrations in terms of the way the media are perceiving this.
Okay.
The media wanted this. We have to remember that.
Yeah.
This is not, the referees didn't bring this in. The referees didn't call for VAR.
Agreed.
It was the clubs and it was the media. The media, for the last 10 years that I can remember, have been using their own little lines to prove referees wrong on offsides, or assistant referees wrong on offsides. I don't know how they calibrated those lines. I don't know where they came from, but they were happy to hang referees out to dry on these offsides and say his shoulder's offside, his foot's offside. Now they've got technology to do that and prove it. They don't want it and they don't trust it, which slightly, you know, that makes me think, well, how could they be so sure that their technology for the last 10 years was fair to hang the referees out to dry? What I've said before, Brawley, people have got to understand that as a referee, I started at 16. I'm 34 now. I've gone through my career not using VAR.
Yeah.
and you build up, you know, okay, new laws will come in or new interpretations of law will come in. But this is the biggest shift in football that we've seen, certainly in my lifetime, in our generation. And we're just expecting referees to be perfect now. If somebody said to you, you're in America, if someone said to you tomorrow, go and drive on the other side of the road. That's the rules now. Sorry, you drive on the other side of the road.
There'd be problems.
And actually, we're going to let you practice that. You can practice it for a little bit. There's going to be no other cars on the road, and you can practice. And it doesn't matter how good you think you become. Suddenly, when we throw you into rush hour traffic, it's different. Mm. And that's what we've done to the referees.
Okay.
You can't practice for a Premier League game. You can't practice to take a penalty kick in a World Cup penalty shootout. You can practice 100 penalties in training, but you can't practice that pressure. So no matter how many hours of training they've done, it doesn't equate to the pressures of a Premier League game.
Okay.
So for us to suddenly say drive on the other side of the road, people will still know how to drive. You won't forget how to drive, Brawley.
Sure.
But your muscle memory will say, this is the position I should be on the road. Actually, there'll be accidents. People don't mean to make them, but they'll make accidents because it's what they've always done. They've driven on the other side. This is where we have to understand that there'll still be mistakes in refereeing because sure. This is such a monumental change to the thought process of a referee. But we're expecting perfection from day one, and that's not realistic to do that. So I think they're in a decent position at the moment. I know that PGMOL are getting battered for, you know, being arrogant and saying that we're going to do it differently. There are different reasons for that, which we can discuss later. But I think people have got to remember, you know, this is a brand new thing. It's brand new for referees as well. 6 months is still brand new in football. This game has been going 150 years. So 6 months is not a long time. And I think we've still got to be a little bit patient.
So have you heard of any suggestions maybe that they would like to see come in as that would help them out, or changes to maybe the offside law, or maybe a gray area? You know what I mean? So do they have any, have you heard of any suggestions or ideas that you think would help? Maybe in the future, going on to next season and beyond?
No, I think the important thing that I think the group need to take on board is that when referees like Anthony Taylor and Michael Oliver do games in the Champions League, they go to the side and they look at the monitor in the Champions League because that's UEFA's protocol. I think the important thing really is to use people like Anthony and Michael, for PGMOL to use Anthony and Michael and say, okay, which one's better? Because they're the only two in that group who've actually can actually experience both of those.
Okay.
If those two referees come back and say, do you know what? I'd prefer to look at it myself. I'd prefer to go to the screen. I think this is a better way of doing it. I think PGMOL and the Premier League have to listen to those two guys. It's no point listening to media saying they want screens. You know, media and Premier League and clubs said they didn't want screens because it takes too long out of the game for the ref to look. Mm. Now they want screens.
Right.
So Anthony and Michael, for me, play a pivotal role in how this goes forward for PGMOL because they're the only two who've experienced both. I have a feeling next season, I don't know this is purely speculation, I haven't heard this from anyone, I have a feeling that they might go to screens next season.
Okay.
Basically because everybody else does that, so why wouldn't you do that?
Sure. What would that mean for the guys down at Stockley Park? What would that mean for them? Would they go away?
No, they'd still be there because the idea of the VAR, they're watching every single decision that goes on.
So they'd be in his ear then?
Yeah. So okay. when people are turning around saying, oh, the VAR didn't even check it, the VAR behind the scenes is checking everything. Just because it doesn't come up on the screen, VAR checking process, the VAR and assistant VAR are actually looking at every single decision that happens. Wow. It's a really mentally tiring job. It's actually far more mentally tiring than refereeing the game, I promise. So they're checking everything. If something comes up where they think it's a penalty or a red card or there's a decision to be made, then they'll tell the referee, don't restart the game next time the ball goes out.
Okay.
Once the game restarts, you can't check it. So don't restart the game. Then you'll see on the screen VAR checking process. So don't be fooled thinking that the VAR is just sat there with a cup of coffee and his feet up and, you know, chilling out for the afternoon. Even if they look at the screen, the VAR will still check. The only difference is, rather than VAR saying, it's a red card, show a red card, they'll then say to the referee, I've seen the tackle. My opinion is that this is a red card. I think you should go and check this at the screen yourself.
Okay.
Just like they do at the MLS.
Yeah.
The MLS does exactly that. So there's no real difference. The only difference is that rather than telling the referee, they'll advise the referee to go and look. And that'll be the only difference. So the VAR is still a massively important role going forward, yeah.
And do you have an opinion on which would be more effective or which would maybe be less time consuming on the two?
I, to be honest, I thought this season, I thought the way the Premier League did it was it would actually be the correct way of doing it. You know, they're referees that are sitting in Stockley Park.
Yeah.
They're Premier League referees. It's not somebody's mum that's there. You
Right.
know, these are professional people. It's a far more, I'd say, less tiring in terms of you haven't got that mental stress of a crowd. You can watch the game. I thought this season would work better than maybe it has in terms of the time it's taken.
Okay.
The other pressure you would put to that is if the referee goes to the side, again, think of this scenario. If Anthony Taylor, let's say we take that one. If Anthony Taylor gives a free kick there and the assistant referee says, sorry, the VAR says, go and look at the screen, that would straight away tell me, if I was refereeing that game, the VAR thinks I'm wrong.
Okay.
They wouldn't tell me to look at the screen. If I was right, they'd just say, yeah, keep playing. It tells me and it tells the whole crowd that my decision must be wrong. If I go to that screen and I look at that decision and I still think, actually, my decision's correct, that's some pressure on a referee
Very,
to stick with their
yeah,
decision.
a lot.
Because Stockley Park there are saying to the ref, basically, you might want to check this because I think you're wrong. The whole stadium knows you're running to the side of the pitch thinking he's got this wrong, he's going to overturn the decision. If I see that and still think my decision's correct, what do? Do you stick with your original decision? That's what you should do. But the amount of pressure on you doing that then looks as if it creates a conflict between yourself and the VAR,
Okay.
which is not what we want as a ref. You also have to remember, you know, making a decision looking at a television screen, I think, is a little bit easier than going for a 10-kilometer run
Yeah,
and
right. You would
then
think.
looking at the screen. So one other thing I'd pose in there would be there's a human element to refereeing as well. If I give a decision, I almost want to be proved correct. That's human nature
Right.
to want that. You don't want to prove yourself wrong in front of everybody, in front of a TV. The guys are professional enough to do that. But if I go and look at a screen and I look at 30 angles and 28 of those show that I'm wrong, but two of them show that I'm right, which would you believe or which would you want to believe? You'd want to look at the two that show that you're correct.
Right.
So there's the danger then of actually having ownership of that decision and saying, yeah, but I want to find, show me another angle, show me an angle until I can see that I'm right, rather than brilliant, you've proved me wrong. You know, that as human nature is not a
Sure.
natural thing to do. So we're asking referees to go out there and say to everyone, I'm absolutely wrong, and just concentrate on the next decision.
And that was going to be one of my next questions is, let's just say Mike Dean, for example, the everyone seems to think he has this massive ego. It's all about him, right? That's what we hear on social media. So let's say Mike Dean has to go look at a decision from the VAR on his own screen. Do you think the referees are professional enough to overturn their own decisions in most cases, or
Absolutely.
is it the case of if you see two right angles but the 28 that are incorrect, do you think there will be some that still stick with their decision even though 28 out of 30 angles proved that they were wrong?
No, I don't think so. I think the guys work with psychologists enough to know that that is human nature, that you would
Okay.
want to do that. What you would want to do and what you know you have to do are two different things, and they're
Okay.
professional enough. You know that these guys work under immense pressure every week. So yes, we're going to pile more pressure on them when they look at a screen. But we looked, I think, in the World Cup, Cüneyt Şakir, the Turkish guy, he got sent to the side, go look at this. And he looked and he went, no, I'm happy. I'll go back. I'll stick with my original decision. I don't think there's an arrogance there. I think if you own that decision as a referee,
Okay.
if you go and you still say, no, I'm right, then you take responsibility for that 100%. You know, there is no blame factor there. The guys are totally professional enough to be able to change their decision. It's also completely false that people at Stockley Park are scared to tell the referees that they're wrong.
Well,
These
that
guys,
was another question I was going to have later, but you can go ahead. Go ahead.
yeah, but these guys work together week in, week out. They meet every 2 weeks. It's
They know it's not personal.
no. Well, I would be more offended, and I know every one of those referees would be more pissed off with the VAR if they haven't told them to change the decision into what is a correct decision. That doesn't matter whether it's Mike Dean refereeing and Andy or Peter Banks, brand new to the league, there is VAR. The Premier League referees, and they all have to look after each other's backs in terms of let's get the big decisions right.
Okay.
You know, this isn't a matter of, oh God, it's Mike Dean. He's very experienced. He's done so many games. I didn't tell him. These guys have thousands of games worth of experience. Mike would be disappointed if that VAR didn't tell them to get that decision right.
Okay.
So that's absolutely false. There's no truth in that whatsoever, that there's a fear of you know, telling their friends that they were wrong.
Yeah, that was my, in my head, it was maybe like in some strange small way that they if it's close, like if maybe it could be one way, maybe the other. I mean, I don't know. It's just what, that's definitely what you hear, and that they've been accused of being scared to overturn their fellow colleagues. So, let's go into the offside law. I want to dive into that because
how long we got?
Yeah, well, yeah. This will be the longest section of the pod. I'm sure it is. So when I wanted VAR to come in, I didn't have in my head, because let's see, how do I put this? I have always been very understanding of referees, especially after talking to you, and I've umpired baseball. So, I mean, nowhere near the level of the Premier League or anything like that, but I understand what it feels like to have people screaming at you and pissed off and mad because they think you got the call wrong. So I've always been very understanding of that. So when I had in my head VAR coming in, I didn't want offside to be this marginal, this close. And now I know you said the media, they have gone and they'll put that line on the pitch. And if it's even close, they're saying, oh, well, referee got that one wrong. You're absolutely right on that. But I think for most people, most sane, anyone with common sense, that wasn't the calls that we were wanting VAR to be brought in for. It was more like, and again, I probably should have sent you a clip of this from last season. There was a situation where we played Liverpool, and it was 0-0 at the time, and James Milner was about 3 yards offside, and the ball comes out to him on the outside of the play, and there's like 8-10 passes in between, and then the goal scored. That's what we were wanting VAR to be brought in, when it's obvious, when the linesman wasn't. The linesman was looking the other way, and he didn't realize.
I remember. Yeah, I remember, you do
remember it. And I just have to think that he just didn't see Milner standing there, and that's what happened there. And I understand that happens, but that's why VAR was brought in, because that's obvious. Yeah. There's no toenail, there's no armpit, that's black and white. He is offside by a country mile. That's what we were wanting it to be brought in for. Now, we are seeing on a week to week basis. And this is what is swaying my views of VAR at the moment, because I've flipped completely since the last time I talked to you on VAR, and it's strictly about the three points that I have here. It's offside, handball, and encroachment on penalties. Those are my three problems I have with it right now. What is your overall thoughts on the offside law as it stands? Do you think it's perfect the way it is? Would you change anything? And how do we avoid going forward scrutinizing this to millimeters? It started with Raheem Sterling offside against West Ham in the opening week of the season. I mean, that was the first armpit decision we got. And I know technically it's not the armpit, it's the shoulder. I understand that.
Correct,
so before you start correcting me on that. But I just want to get your overall feel for what you think. Because you're a fan. You go to games.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
The feeling that you're taken away, like, I don't know. I keep handing it off to you, and I'm not. But the taking away of ecstasy when you're at that stadium and that goal goes in to give yourself a 1-0 lead in the 88th minute to win the game, and you're scrutinizing it, and you take that off the board, and fans are being turned off by that. I just want to know what do you think about this law and how it's being used right now.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so offside as a law is actually, when you look at the laws of the game, there's actually less text on offsides than there is on goal kicks. You know, this is not a difficult law. Hmm. It's made difficult by people putting their own interpretations on it. I actually think, go back to what before VAR, players, fans, media and referees, everybody, I think, understood where we were with offside.
Yeah.
I think they all had an understanding of what interference was, of what line of sight was. I think we were pretty much in the best place I think we've ever been in terms of offside. The problem now, and we foresaw this, we saw this coming, law in terms of offside is not clear and obvious. This clear and obvious that's used in terms of tackles and red cards and penalties, this is not used for offside.
Right.
Offside is exactly the same as goals. It's black and white. It's either offside or it's not offside. Now, again, we looked and said, okay, when you've got cameras that can prove then, when it's a toenail or whether it's a shoulder that's offside, referees can't turn around and say, well, it's only a couple of millimetres, so we'll allow it. You wouldn't turn around and say, well, you know, there's only a couple of metres, a millimetres of the ball that's not over the line, so just give the goal. You know, nobody would accept that.
Okay.
Now we have an issue because, as the law is written, any part of the body that can score a goal and you know all that, you know, that can be offside. If we're saying that it's a shoulder that's offside, the referees have nowhere to go. They don't write the laws of the game. I think personally what needs to happen now, I don't think we need two sets of laws, but I do think we need a clarification for games that use VAR. I don't know what that is. I don't have the answer to this one, okay. I'm afraid. But I think there's got to be some clarification. If the technology, and I'm not sure, I don't know the answer to it, if the technology is accurate enough to be able to tell that, then fine, use it. But I agree with you, as a fan, I don't think we wanted VAR. We wanted VAR for my decision at West Ham Bournemouth.
Yes.
As a referee, that's what I want it for. I don't want it for 1 centimetre of his foot that's in an offside position. That doesn't feel right to me.
Yep.
Take the Aguero goal when he scores for Man City, wins the league. That, for me, epitomises Premier League
100%.
Emotion, everything about it. Now imagine that happening this season. Bro, it's not going to happen this season by the look of it, but imagine that happening to end this season. He scores, people half cheer. They can't fully do it. They can't cheer and say, we've won the league.
Yeah.
Because they'll cheer initially when the ball hits the back of the net. Everyone in that stadium will now go,
Tell us, wait.
Was there a foul 7 seconds ago? You know, did it touch his finger? You know, we're in danger of losing that emotion. We said this would happen as referees. We knew this would happen. The media wanted it. The clubs wanted it. We warned against it and said football as a product is not going to be improved by this. Decisions will be improved by it. You know, the big decisions we'll get rid of. But as a product, I watched Rangers against Celtic the other day. They don't have VAR in Scotland. No. Rangers Celtic's an incredible game in Scotland. The intensity in that game. There's a goal that's scored. Celtic equalise. He shoots. It hits his hand and goes in. Referee couldn't see that. It's hit at pace. With VAR, that goal doesn't stand. So we get the correct decision. It's a huge decision. However, what a brilliant game to watch. Because at no point was there any stoppages. Nobody was waiting for 3 minutes. Nobody was worried that when the ball hit the net, the assistant didn't have his flag up, the referee didn't blow his whistle, so it's a goal. Nobody panicked. I loved that game for the emotion of football, even without VAR, even looking at a decision and saying, actually, VAR would have ruled this out correctly, would have ruled this out. Football's a sport. I understand the business people who have millions of pounds involved in this want these decisions right. Tens of millions, hundreds of millions of people watch this game because they enjoy it, and they enjoy it for the emotion. I think we're in danger of losing that a little bit. So
I think you're spot on.
By doing it to millimetres, the referees have to do it the way the law's written at the moment. But I don't think anybody wants Pukki's goal for Norwich at the weekend. If it's correct and if it's millimetres offside, we don't want to rule goals like that out. The referees don't want to. I'm not going to blame the referees for that because what they've done is correct. But their hands are being completely tied by a law that was not written with VAR in mind. I think it needs rewriting with VAR in mind now.
Well, this is what people wanted to hear, I think. And I think if people heard this from the referees, they would... And I don't know that people are necessarily, even this season, directly upset with individual referees. It seems like VAR is taking the brunt of the abuse. And I think if people heard this from referees, that would... And I think people are going to enjoy what you just said, that... That these referees, they don't want these goals ruled out. They don't feel good. It doesn't sit right with them Wolves, that kid scored his first ever Premier League goal at Anfield.
Yeah.
And you take that away from him. I mean, that just sits so not right with me. And it hurts my soul as a fan. Like, and you took away 3,000 Wolves fans going absolutely berserk in the away end, and you take that away. You know, it just doesn't seem right. So I guess my next question to you is, have you ever been a linesman yourself? Have you always been a head referee?
Okay, yeah, so
you've worked the lines before.
I was an assistant referee in the Premier League for a season, actually, when I was
I didn't know that.
if you remember the game with the beach ball between Sunderland and Liverpool.
Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, I was on the halfway line as an assistant on the game.
Oh,
so
my
yeah,
days.
So yeah, I was an assistant.
So you're talking
for a
about
season.
The game that the ball hit the beach ball and went in.
The one, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
Wow. We'll have to if for any of our listeners that don't know what game that is, I'll have to find a clip of it and post it.
Yeah.
So you were working the lines that game.
I was on the halfway line
of
that game. Yes.
Okay. I had no idea. But so when you're first being taught as a linesman, so I think where I'm going with this is I think we're in danger of losing linesmen if this is the way offside's going to go. I feel like there has to be technology where you can put a camera, a rail, and the camera goes up and down the line. It follows the last defender, puts the flag up automatically. I think we're in danger of going that route, which to me doesn't sit right either.
I agree. Yep.
So as a linesman, you're taught, I believe, now correct me if I'm wrong, I think if you see daylight, usually am I wrong in thinking that that's when you put your flag
up? It used to be that if there was daylight between them, that would be offside. Listen, how these guys do that, I mean, they've moved on certainly since I was on the line as well. The speed of the game is unbelievable.
Oh, I know.
You have defenders that are running out at 15 miles an hour, attackers that are running in at 15 miles an hour, they're crossing at 30. You know, if you look out of the side window of your car when a car drives past, it's quick at 15 miles an hour.
Yeah.
When you're traveling at the other direction, try and take a snapshot, try and see what the driver looks like. Do you know what I mean? So that's what you're asking them to do. They actually got 99% of decisions correct, which I think is phenomenal.
That is.
So when you're looking, you almost, this is where the human eye can never beat a television camera. When a ball's being played from 70 yards away.
And your eyes have to be in two places.
You can't do that. So naturally, so before the game, the two assistant referees, their communication, their microphones, there's a slight delay on them. Obviously, it's got to go up to space somewhere and come back down into his ear.
Yep.
So there's a slight, whatever, fraction of a second delay. Sure. So before the game, they'll actually calibrate that. The two assistants calibrate that between themselves to see what that delay is. When that ball is played during the game by the right back, the assistant referee who's actually going to be active for the offside then, he can't be the ball. Because by the time you've looked at the ball being played and then looked at the attacker, you have a completely different picture from the moment that ball was played.
Sure.
So what the assistant referees do is they're looking at the defensive line all the time. The assistant referee on the other side of the pitch will say now. So they'll tell them exactly the moment that ball's played with the calibrated, so they'll know that it's at the exact time. That then gives the assistant a chance. Now, the human eye, again, is never going to pick up when somebody's 60 yards on the other side of the pitch, 2 millimetres. You're not going to see that. The television camera can. So this is where, you know, this is where you're going to see these millimeter decisions. How many decisions have you seen this season from assistant referees that have been horribly wrong?
None.
Not many at all. Yeah. These guys are good at what they do. They're bloody good at what they do. So the ones that we're actually seeing where they get them wrong as such are ones that are centimeters. So if anything, I think that's showing how good the assistants are. The problem is now they're going to have, I don't know the mindset there of an assistant referee. I'm not sure what they're told, to be honest, Brawley. If I don't flag offside and a goal scored and then someone says, yeah, it's offside, give a free kick, as an assistant, you're then thinking, oh, my God, it looked onside, it looked clearly onside. You now start questioning your own eyes. You then have to think about your next decision, you know. So then I think it's difficult, the psychology of that, for an assistant referee. I'm not sure if the VAR will, again, this is maybe why it would be really good to hear the conversation, is the VAR saying, do you know what? Don't worry about the decision. It's centimetres. You couldn't possibly have seen it. That, to me, as an assistant, would make me feel a lot better.
Yeah.
I'd trust what I'm seeing then, because I know I can't see centimetres. But if they're just saying it's offside, if that assistant doesn't know whether it's 2 centimetres or 2 yards wrong, I think psychologically that can play in your head then. So, yeah, let's listen to that audio. I think that'll be fascinating to listen to.
And so I think you said this, or you touched it. Do you know whether linesmen are being told to keep their flag down if it's close, or are they playing it like normal, like VAR is not even there? They're just doing their thing.
Yeah, they're being told to keep the flag down if it's close now. So that's not a fear of not knowing what they're doing. That's not that.
No.
What we don't want to happen is that we have the technology now. We didn't previously, so we couldn't prove it right or wrong. We have the technology now. So what we don't want is for an assistant to flag, a referee to blow, And then a second later, the ball goes in the back of the net.
Which we saw happen with...
Absolutely.
Was it Villa that it happened to?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Or no, it was Newcastle and... who were they playing against? I can't remember. But it was Jonjo Shelvey who scored the goal, if we're thinking about the same instance, where the flag goes up, the defenders stop, and then Shelvey just continues on and scores the goal. And then they go back and was like, oh, well, actually, he was onside.
Yeah.
So that's the danger that poses, correct?
Yeah, so basically what they're saying is they'll keep the flag down. I'm absolutely certain that the assistant referee is saying to the ref, I think that's offside. I'm keeping the flag down. We're going to let play go on a little bit, but I think that's offside. You'll even see at times, actually, when they'll leave the flag down, and then a couple of seconds later, when it's clear a goal's not going to be scored, they then flag
up, yeah.
So then they're saying, yeah, okay, there's no danger of a goal. We can have the offside now. And people are saying, oh, the flag was late. That's basically to make sure that a goal isn't scored from it. They're not ruling out what could potentially be a good goal, sorry. So, yeah, they are keeping them down. That's a skill in itself, actually.
I'm sure.
Also a skill for a referee, because when they see a flag go up, if it does go up a little early and there's a potential goal, as a ref, my thing was, yeah, the flag's gone up, blow the whistle. Whereas now they've almost got to see the flag and think, okay, there could be a goal here.
What's going to happen? Yeah.
Hold it. Goal goes in right now. Let's. A lot of things that go on in the referee's head there now that's been added this season, not just having a background of a VAR, extra things to think about, which we didn't think about before. There is a delay. People will see a delay in that just to make sure that we're not incorrectly flagging a good goal.
And it's not just officials that are having to be retrained what they've learned their whole lives, because what you just said, linesmen, I'm sure they're eager. Like the instinct says, put your flag up. He's offside, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Of course.
I mean, and that in itself probably it probably hurts their brains. It's like it's like a sneeze. You can't get out. Like, oh, he's offside, and I got to keep my flag down. But the same thing for players now, because when you saw that Jonjo Shelvey goal against, I can't remember who it was against, but
Sheffield United, I think it was. Sheffield United.
I think you're right. Yeah. With Sheffield United, players have stopped, and now they can't do that because your memory says, see that flag, the whistle's going to go, the play's
correct.
Over, we're going the other way. And that goal didn't sit with me well, strictly, it did not feel good, that goal going in. That's one of the cases where I would rather that goal not gone in. It's a rare case. So it isn't just referees that are having to retrain their brains, it's the players as well, because they got to get used to this as well. So it goes both ways. Do you think we can improve the offside law, or do you think we could make, I don't know, a margin of error on that line where it has to be a certain, I don't know how you do it with the technology, the pixels on the screen, I don't know how that is, but I mean, can we make a set distance where maybe if he's X distance in front of the last. I mean, in my head, like where is the advantage gained? At what distance is there an advantage gained? And I'm sure that's the question in your head, and all everyone else is writing these laws heads. I mean, where does that guy gain an advantage? Where is he cheating by being ahead of the last defender? Do you have any suggestions on how we can improve offside?
Yeah, I think there's so a couple of things to pick up. The lines are the things that people are really going mad on at the moment. The lines that are being drawn at the scene on TV, just clear that up for them a little bit. The lines that you see on TV is not the line that the VAR is using.
Okay.
So when you start seeing dotted lines being drawn down to the floor and red and blue lines, and this is not the line that VAR is using. VAR uses a line that's a pixel thick. The lines that you see on TV, if you actually equate those lines to the, say, the 18-yard box, the lines on the 18-yard box is 5 inches thick. If you were to look at the thickness of that line compared to the blue and red lines for offside that are being used, that would actually make those blue and red lines about 2.5 inches thick.
Wow.
Now, that can't be right. You can't do that. So the line that VAR is using is very, very different. It's a really almost, you can hardly see it on the TV when you look at this line. The reason they have the blue and red line is for television purposes and for the screen in the stadium, so people can actually see where their lines are. So people are falling for this, that the VAR are just using. It looks like something that's been drawn in Microsoft Paint.
Yeah, it does.
You know, and that's not the line that VAR is using. It's much more accurate than what you're seeing on television.
Okay.
So first of all, there is that. Secondly, I don't think you can have we'll allow 2 millimeters, but not 3 millimeters. And because every manager will want that 2 millimeters if they score the goal. But I assure you, the moment you start bringing in that area, that grey area, every manager who concedes a goal that they can prove was offside will come out and say, we've got the technology, why aren't we using it? You know, so that's where the danger is. My personal thing, I don't know, I've had to think about this over the last few days. Take Pukki the other day.
Yeah, okay.
If a player's that far from goal and his shoulder or head is in an offside position and he's still got 25, 30 yards to run, I don't think he's gaining an advantage from that. I've listened to a lot of people who have written, and I think there's some brilliant suggestions that people have come up with on Twitter so far, fans, who I think we should listen to. These people are involved in the game. You know, they know football, the fans.
Sure.
I like the idea of if the feet are onside, you know, that's easy to do. That's easy to, if your foot's in an onside position, then you're onside. I think if you judge it that if your feet are onside, it's onside, unless you score directly with your head.
Okay.
And in that situation, then the head becomes important, because if the head's in front, you've gained an advantage by your head being in front of the defender.
That's fair.
Other than that, if it's a goal that's scored with the foot, or it's a goal where somebody's run through from a position that's, you know, 20 yards from goal, like Pukki, 25 yards, I think if the feet are onside, you're not going to gain too much of an advantage by your head being 2 centimetres offside there.
Okay.
So maybe that would work. Again, you can't write that into law.
No.
For grassroots football.
Sure.
What you can do is you can write that in as protocol for VAR. This is where I think you might need to separate the offside law for people who are for games that are using VAR and games that are not using VAR.
I think that's fair. Do you have an opinion as to where the advantage is on the line? On at what point does a player have an advantage?
I mean, I think, as I said, I think if your feet are in front of the other defender, you've gained an advantage because you're further forward on the pitch, physically further forward. You know, your feet are physically further forward, so therefore your body must be. As I said, I think if your head is further forward when a cross comes in and it's your head that scores the goal, not the foot, it's your head that scores it, then I think then that should be judged as offside. This becoming such a difficult law now. It really is. And we're asking guys to judge this with the naked eye. We're also asking guys to, you know, they have professional reputations as VARs to be put on the line. Black and white decisions have to be, you know, there is no grey area there.
Okay.
It's either right or wrong. So we can't just suddenly say to these refs, you're being pedantic by, they're not being pedantic, they're being governed and driven by the laws of the game, which is tying their hands in that sense.
Got it. Let's move on to handball. We've seen this season several goals. I think West Ham have had 2 or 3 ruled out, and probably 2 or 3 against us as well. I think we've actually had it go both ways this season, so it's not just crying one way and not having it the other. But it doesn't seem right to me that when a player is, again, 30 yards from goal, the player comes off a defender, his arms are down by his side, it just grazes off of his hand. They continue on, 8 passes later, ball goes in the back of the net, it's a goal, and then all of a sudden it's being ruled out. Do you have a problem with, again, I know this is probably what, it's a backlash from the media or people pressuring, saying, hey, it hit his hand, so it needs to be ruled out. But, I mean, do you have an opinion as to whether this law has been a good addition to the Premier League this season?
I actually think the law's been good because it's this is black and white now.
Yeah,
again,
true.
The more black and white we can have, the easier there is for a referee and for a fan to understand. The problem, someone asked me a question on this exact one. You might remember it, actually. A young guy on Twitter from Norway said, if it hits a defender's hand in his own penalty area, but it's not deliberate, so it's not a penalty kick.
Mm.
It drops to his own feet. He then sends it 80 yards up the field to one player and he scores, which is technically the start of an attacking move.
Yeah, right.
What would you do? What's the outcome? You can't give a penalty because it's not deliberate, but you have to penalise it.
That's a great question.
That at an attacking move, which would be a penalty kick. I didn't know the answer to this. Didn't have a clue. I actually contacted David Ellery, who's the head of IFAB, who write the laws of the game.
Okay.
And I asked the question to David. And David came back with a response and said, yeah, this is not what the law was brought in for, obviously. The law was brought in so that it stops people handling the ball in an attacking move in the other penalty area or whatever and then scoring a goal. IFAB have actually said that they'll discuss this at the end of the season. They can't change things mid-season. So because of that question, they actually said, yeah, we're going to discuss this at the end of the season. I think they're going to clarify this law in that if he handles it and then scores, then it's going to be disallowed. As you said there, if he handles it and then there's eight passes, that's just part of the game. That's natural game. If the referee doesn't see that, they don't see it.
Okay.
So I think they're going to clarify this one. I'm not certain, but I'm pretty sure that they're going to clarify that law to say in the event of scoring a goal, if the ball is handled in the immediate build-up to that,
okay,
then it'll be disallowed. So going back three or four passes, that will be taken away. And again, I think that will be clarified in next season's laws of the game. Well, we'll wait and see that, but it was a great question from the Norwegian kid, to be fair.
And was that a question directed at you?
Yeah, he just asked me a question. And then, funnily enough, the next day, Liverpool and Manchester City, exactly that thing happened. It hits a hand inside the penalty area. They send it up the other end of the field and they score a goal. So, amazingly, the day after it happened. I asked the question the day before and they said, well, it's not likely to happen, but...
Yeah, then it happened.
The day after it happens. And that just proves anything can happen in a game of football. So,
yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, so I think you'll have clarification on that next season.
Okay. And my third point that I have my issues with VAR at the moment is the nitpicking of encroachment on penalties. Mm. Now,
yep.
I don't understand. And again, it goes back to before we had VAR, it was probably being looked at. But I think the issue was if the encroaching player actually kicked the ball out of play.
Yep.
Or he was the first one to touch the ball, make contact with the ball. And now we're seeing where a penalty, it's just a random player who's on the opposite side of where the ball is can be a foot offside or a foot encroaching the line. And that goal's being ruled out and having to be retaken, or the save's being ruled out and they're having to retake the penalty again, and then usually they score. Why are people being punished for encroaching when they have nothing to do with the play?
Again, this is laws of the game. So this isn't the referee's fault. The laws state that any player who's inside the area, you know, blah, 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 blah. So it doesn't say who that player has to be. It just says any player who is within inside the area. So therefore, the refs have to follow the word of the law. If there's a player who's not involved at all, but is inside and it's saved, then unfortunately it's a retake as it stands. Personally, do you know what? I'd love to see a massive change in this.
I think I've read your response on this. I'll let you explain it.
I don't think there's a need for players to be on the edge of that penalty area. A penalty kick, if you look at rugby, they get a penalty. It's a conversion. It's basically one player trying to kick it through the post.
Yeah.
There's nobody else involved in that. Basketball, you get a free throw. Okay, people can come in afterwards. But you look at that first free throw, it's just a throw.
Yeah.
Why not have that in football? Get the players to stand, I don't know, halfway line,
sure,
wherever, get them to stand there, have a one-on-one penalty kick. You have a chance. It's a one-time chance. It's a one shot. If it comes back from the goalkeeper, just like a penalty shootout,
it's dead.
Game's over. Goalkeeper restarts with a goal kick or whatever. You get a one chance. That takes away so much controversy in terms of penalty kicks.
100%.
And I can't see why football isn't moving towards that. I really don't understand why they haven't sat down and gone, actually, do you know what? This just makes sense. It's a one-chance shot. It's a penalty kick. The penalty is that you give the other team a shot to score a goal. Why would we have a rebound? You miss that chance. Why should that same player... Because let's be honest, the goalkeeper's on the floor by that time.
Yep.
The chance of that player scoring the rebound is probably higher than him scoring the penalty kick.
100%.
So why give him that second chance? You have one chance, you miss, goal kick. So I don't know. I'm maybe on a one-man campaign to try and get that one into the laws.
I'm with you. You got two men behind you.
It just makes sense, bro. Yeah, it just makes sense there. So, but yeah, like I said, mate, go back to the encroachment. It's down to the refs. Luckily, we didn't stick with the ridiculous ruling that if the goalkeeper comes off the line like the Women's World Cup.
Yes.
Because they were having retakes for 2 centimetres off the line when the goalkeeper made a great save. Now, naturally, a goalkeeper's going to be off the line. Forward momentum of a goalkeeper will naturally do that. To try and save a penalty kick and having your feet planted on a goal line is pretty difficult.
Yes, very.
You know, and the odds are against the keeper as it is. So I think they've done well allowing that to be the on-field decision. If it's really obvious, have a retake. If it's not, carry on. I'd go back to doing the same for the referees on the edge of the penalty area, actually, because it wasn't an issue. This is something that we've almost tried to fix that wasn't broken.
No, I agree.
Nobody really complained that much.
No.
Let's face it, going back over the years, nearly every penalty kick could have a retake.
Yeah.
Because somebody's half a yard or he's leaning inside the penalty area. We don't want to see that. We don't want retakes. And the pressure then goes on the referee for being pedantic and nitpicky, as you said.
Yep.
When actually, the refs don't want it. Players don't want it. Just have a free shot at goal, and everybody else is out of the way.
I've actually said this before as well, so I'm glad you can reaffirm that. It's just, that amen. Yeah, it's just a dead ball. You get your one chance. There's no one following up the rebound. The goalkeeper can stay on the ground and not have to worry about getting up for another save. I mean, I totally agree with that. And the Wolves, was it Wolves Man City the other day? Where I believe Sterling had a penalty. It was saved, ruled out for encroachment. Retake, save, and he falls in the rebound. And in our situation, the first penalty would have been it, and it would have been done. Correct. And that's how it probably should be.
I agree.
So now I want to address because obviously, since I live in America, I haven't been to a game in 2.5 years. Actually, the last game I went to was that game. Yes,
I'm sorry.
So for me, it doesn't affect people watching on TV as much, but I am really concerned about the fans in the stadium and how they are being told about these decisions, or they're not being told at all. They're seeing it on a screen, and in two stadiums around the league, you can't even see it because there's no screens in the stadium.
Yeah.
I believe Old Trafford and Anfield are the
Anfield,
only two.
Anfield, yeah, it's true. Yeah.
So I'm sure referees would like to get the word out, because I mean, at least people can be understanding of what's going on in the stadium. Mm-hmm. But when fans are being left in the dark and you're just catering to the people sitting at home, I think that's a problem. I think it's a gigantic problem. Do you have any suggestions for maybe that being improved, or do you think there should be a microphone where you're explaining what's going on like the NFL? I mean, how do you think this could be improved?
I think the first thing they have to do is that they tell the two teams who don't have a screen to have a screen. I think that should be a policy.
Okay.
It's difficult at Old Trafford. Where would you put it? You know, there's seats everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And as a business, you're then saying to someone potentially you have to take out 1,000 seats to have a screen. And as a business, they won't do that.
No.
So, you can do that at 18 out of the 20. I'm pretty sure I'm not a techie person. I'm not particularly tech savvy. But I'm pretty sure that somebody can develop an app. I'm absolutely certain that every fan who goes in there with a smartphone, you could have an app, a VAR app, where for those two stadiums that you don't have the screen, you go in, you download the app for free and stick your headphones in and you can hear that conversation if you want. You know, why not have that? Why not be able to do that? As I said, there's nothing to hide. I actually think I watched the Rugby World Cup. It just worked brilliantly. It takes a long time. You know, because you have the referee looking at the screen, he's discussing it that with the VAR or the TMO in rugby. But ultimately, you'll always get the pantomime drama if this is on a screen. If this is at West Ham, 3,000 people will be cheering because they're saying it's a penalty kick. Mm-hmm. 52,000 people, 47,000, whatever, will be screaming, saying, oh, no, we're trying to pile the pressure on the ref. It's not a penalty. That's pantomime, and that's what will happen. It'll be funny, actually. But you know what? If people can listen to that conversation between VAR and referee, who are looking at it together, two professional referees, and they're saying, yeah, I can see his foot slightly raised. He's gone in. I don't think he's gone studs. Therefore, I think it's only yellow. People would understand. They might not agree, but they understand. And I think that education is really important. That's the thing. I don't understand every technicality about rugby union. But I find it fascinating listening to the referees talking about the technical side of that.
Sure.
About how they've reached a certain decision. By the end of it, I don't know whether it's a penalty or not, but I believe them. Because they've actually talked so clear and so logically that you go, yeah,
reasoning.
That makes sense. So even if I don't agree, it makes sense. So I think we're missing a trick there. Maybe that comes next season. Maybe it does. We have to. I went to watch Huddersfield and Man United in the FA Cup a few years ago when they were trialling VAR. And I knew what was happening. I was sat in the stadium knowing what was happening at Stockley Park, knowing what the referee was doing, and it was still uncomfortable to watch.
Mm.
You know, because 2 minutes inside a football stadium of nothing. You think about a minute's silence before a game, it feels like 5 minutes. It doesn't seem like 60 seconds.
Yeah.
So when you've got nothing happening inside a football stadium for 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, now multiply that by 10 on the pitch. That's how it feels. So the referee standing there, thinking, and the players as well, going, well, what's happening? You know, what are we doing? Engage people in that. This isn't a blame of PGMOL. This is not a blame of the FA, of the Premier League. This is, you know, nobody in the world is engaging fans at the moment.
Right.
Other sports do. I'm not sure I like the NFL's stand and explain it to the crowd. I'm not sure I buy into that. I do think if you have an app there where people can just listen to that conversation, there's no need to explain that to the crowd.
So you're saying at home you would hear it on your television screen if you're at the game, you have your headphone in and you can hear what's going
open
on.
Open the VAR app, yeah. If you know that it's going to a VAR decision, open the app, select the game, and you can hear the conversation. I don't know if that works. As I said, I'm
sure.
Throwing some
I don't
know it's technologically possible, but I'm sure it is in 2019.
Sure.
You know, there's no worse feeling as a referee. Before we had VAR, I promise, there's no worse feeling. You give a decision, and within 2 minutes, you know that you're wrong. The reason you know that you're wrong is because the whole crowd have seen it on Twitter.
Right.
You know, everybody had seen it on social media, so they're battering you on, oh, we've just seen it. Okay.
It was like you at Bournemouth. I knew as soon as the final whistle went, when I pulled that. Yeah, right. And that's the problem. And that's why VAR is here.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we're getting there's too fine a margins, in my opinion, right now.
I think we're losing the reason that we fell in love with football a little bit, bro. 100%. I think that's the problem. Let's not take that away. That's why I love going and watching non-league football at the moment. It's just football.
Yeah.
There is no stoppage. There's no complaining. If it's offside, well, there's only the assistant referee that knows. And if I'm a yard to his left, I don't know. I'm guessing. And I love that pure element of the sport, which I think is being diluted now into being far too technical, far too, you know, statistic driven.
Sure.
At the end of the day, I can't remember a Premier League season where the best team didn't win the league. And I can't remember a season where the worst three teams didn't get relegated. So over a season, no team has ever finished bottom who should have won the league.
Yeah, right.
Over a season, it works out over 38 games. Liverpool, with or without VAR this season, would be top of the league. I'm certain of it.
Yes.
Whether it's by 14 points, 8 points, whatever, they'd be top of the league because they've been the best team. So therefore, we're actually looking a lot more intricately into decisions and giving ourselves far more to talk about when we're actually coming to the same result. The right team will win the league at the end of the season. It might be naive to say that. And okay, margins might be the difference between... But 38 games, those margins, you know, that doesn't come down to one decision in 38 games. It comes down to penalties missed in match day 4. It comes into, you know, a ball giving away, Gerrard's slip in match day 34 or whatever. These are the fine margins, not 1 millimetre on offside. So these are the fine margins people want to be talking about.
Sure.
Footballing incidents, not referee and media. Referees don't want people talking about referees.
Right. Fair enough.
But we are. Sadly, that's what we're doing now.
So and just real quickly to go back, I'm sure you've seen the video of the Australian League. Is that scenario what you would like to see brought into the Premier League?
Yeah, I mean, Chris Beath, I think the referee was after the game, he just went and explained it. You have to understand the Australian media and the British media are very different animals.
I'm sure.
The Australians want education. They want people to understand. They love that element of respect in their sport. British media don't really buy into that. They want, you know, they want to see the referee sweat a little bit after a game. I actually posted out on my Twitter page a trial that we did in Hong Kong with Dave Jones and Alan Smith.
I saw that.
Yeah, and that was really good because Dave and Alan, who were doing the interview, they wanted to know about refereeing. They were not interested in trying to catch me out. It was a friendly game, so it's easy to do that.
Sure.
If it's a Premier League game, that might be slightly different. You want that element of controversy if you're the media. But actually, people have commented on that and said, this is great to listen to a referee, same as they have the Australian guy. In terms of the Australian guy going over to the screen and the discussion with VAR, that would actually be solved quicker in England because it's a clear red card. The VAR would say, stop the game, give the red, carry on. But the fact that people have been able to hear the conversation, they don't care about the two-minute wait because that 2 minutes has been filled with something that's interesting. Rather than just a referee standing with his hand to his ear and nothing, they haven't minded waiting for 2 minutes to find out what the outcome is because they've actually been entertained as such by the conversation between VAR and referee. It fills that gap. So, yeah, maybe that would work. I do think that would be a massive improvement.
Why do you think they are not letting us hear what the referees are saying? Do you think there's a reason for that?
I genuinely don't think that. I mean, the media the media listen to it, the media can hear it. So the guys who are commentating listen to the VAR referee conversation, so they can hear that. They have an open mic to that.
I don't even know if I knew that.
Yeah, they do. So when you hear the VAR, or the VAR standing with his hand on his ear, occasionally the commentators say, this is going to be given as a penalty kick. The reason they know is because they're listening to what the VAR is saying to the referee.
Wow.
Now, so there's no secret there. I think, again, this is brand new. There's been no training on this in terms of communication between ref and VAR on Premier League matches until you start the Premier League. So maybe this season it's just given them a season where they can nail down how do we speak. What people don't want to hear is a VAR going, shit, I ain't got a clue. You know, they don't want to hear that. Yeah. So maybe get rid of all that. And then you can say, okay, John Moss is refereeing. John, this is what I'm looking at. Bang, bang, bang. You know, it's very, you know, it's nailed down then. They know what the conversations are going to be. Maybe it's a season where they can just get used to that kind of conversation that they haven't done previously on the game. But I do think it'll come. I do think it will. I want it to come. As a fan, I really want that because I do think that'll enhance the fan experience. And as a ref, I want it to come because I think it'll, you know, it'll enhance the understanding. People won't have a clue what Michael Oliver's saying. But, I mean, it's George. He's from Newcastle, so I struggle sometimes. So that bit you might struggle with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's. I don't think there's any secretive reasoning for that. I do think that it'll come.
Okay, so now I want to do a little mock VAR scenario here. So, and real quick, Bobby, have you ever worked VAR in your career, in your professional refereeing career? So have you sat in that room in like Stockley Park and refereed?
Yeah.
Okay, so you know what goes on behind the scenes that we don't get to see, and you know the scenario. So I wanted to bring up a scenario here, and this was just a couple of weeks ago. It was Southampton at home to West Ham, a game that I'm sure most of our listeners will be familiar with, and there was a decision in that game that is a very subjective decision, which is why I didn't want to do an offside. I didn't want to do encroachment. I wanted a subjective decision so you can talk me through what happens on this play, okay? So we have I'm at the point where Robert Snodgrass is in the middle of the pitch, and he now – well, let's see if I can get it to play.
I'm watching on mine as well.
Okay, yeah, so he sends it out wide.
Yeah.
Ball comes in, there's a cross in the area, and it goes over two West Ham players' heads, and they've both been tackled to the floor. Now, Mikel Antonio and Sebastian Haller were absolutely mauled and tackled and brought to the ground, and there should be two penalties on the play. And Martin Atkinson does not give it on the pitch, and then there's a check that goes, and they decide that there's no penalty. Now, if we were sitting, if you were the video assistant referee in Stockley Park, and you're watching this, and I know you're going to have more angles there.
Yeah.
I know you're going to have better view, but I'm just for this sake, this is the only angle we have. Can you take me through a decision, and what would your decision be? I'm not asking you to throw Martin Atkinson under the bus if your decision would be penalty, but I want to know just what your brain would be if you were looking at this at Stockley Park.
Okay, so first of all, the most important thing that you need to do as a VAR in that situation is listen to the referee.
Okay.
So when this decision happens, clearly there's a decision to be made, whether it's a penalty or not. There's a key decision. Because it's inside the penalty area, it falls under VAR protocol. So the first thing I'd say there, I have an assistant VAR, they have an assistant VAR. I would say to my assistant VAR, keep watching the game. Because obviously while I'm looking at a replay, I need somebody to keep watching the game in case something else happens. You watch the game. I'm now looking at this replay. I tell them I want this angle, this angle. I also listen to the ref.
Okay.
If the referee says, I haven't seen what's happened, guys, I know that I have 100% blank page to work with there. The referee hasn't seen anything. So this is fully my decision as VAR.
Okay.
If the referee says, I'm looking at it, I've seen her coming together, they just run into each other, that gives me some information. The referee's seen a view of this. Unless I can prove what the referee has said is clearly and obviously wrong, whether I think that's a penalty or not, I can't say that he's clearly wrong. In this situation, there are two players. I think it's Ryan Bertrand and Mikel Antonio. They run into each other at the back post. Let's say Antonio runs into Bertrand. Bertrand knows he's there. Okay, he knows he's there. Without a doubt, he knows he's there. If he didn't, he shouldn't be on the pitch.
Okay.
So he knows he's there. He puts his body in the way of Antonio. He makes sure that he continues to run. I'm just going to watch that through again.
Yeah, go ahead.
Got this right. So Bertrand is behind Antonio, both looking at the ball, both challenging for the ball. He knows Antonio's there. They're both running in the same direction. For me, Bertrand doesn't change his path, doesn't change the path to run into Antonio. They make contact with each other. Antonio falls over. If Martin Atkinson there says, I've seen the decision, they're both looking at the ball, Bertrand just runs into him and it's just normal football contact, I can't say that's clearly and obviously wrong as VAR.
Okay.
If he says, I haven't seen anything, and then I look at that and think, well, Bertrand's run into him and he's pushed him over, then I can say to Martin, Martin, this is a penalty kick because he hasn't seen it. The other situation that's just outside of that, where a player runs past, I'm not sure who the defender is, he runs past and he maybe has his arm on his chest. Again, there's normal football contact in a penalty area. A defender will try to stop an attacker. They've got to do that somewhere within the laws of the game.
Okay.
To put an arm across a chest, if I walk past you in the supermarket and put my arm on your chest, you won't fall over. It takes a lot to push a big guy over.
Okay.
If you're doing it from behind, I think it's easier to do. When you're running into someone who has their arm up, you wouldn't naturally fall forward. So my thinking there would be, okay, there is contact. Clearly there's contact. But he falls forwards. The arm stops him, and yet the player falls forwards. That doesn't make sense to me, that which would suggest that he's clearly not. If you put an arm out to stop somebody, they would either stop in their motion mm-hmm. or they would fall backwards.
Right.
They wouldn't fall forwards.
Okay.
Because when you run into someone's arm, it doesn't make sense. If you run into someone's leg, they would because you trip them up. But not an upper body arm. Wouldn't make you fall forward. So, again, I'd look at that and think there's not enough there. There's not enough to tell me that that's clearly and obviously a penalty kick. So my situation there, I would say to Martin, I wouldn't even go over that situation as VAR. VAR will say to Martin, the ball goes out of play. Martin, do not restart play. I'm checking for a penalty kick. Martin would say, yeah, this is what I've seen. Okay, I'm going to check. As VAR, I would just go back to Martin there and say, Martin, check complete. I don't need to go into detail. I don't need to say why he's right. All I need to say is check complete. I'm not going to overturn your decision. In that situation, if I'd have been VAR, I wouldn't have overturned that. I don't think there's enough there to say that that's a clear and obvious mistake. As a referee on the game, I might have given a penalty kick. There's where the difference is. This is where you've got a different mindset as VAR. I might think it's a penalty kick, but unless I can say Martin's reading of that and his interpretation, which is just as valid as mine, is clearly and obviously wrong. If he says there's no contact between the two players, then I can say you're clearly and obviously wrong. There is. If he says it's just normal contact, it runs into each other, yeah, they're both looking at the ball, it's no foul, it's not clearly and obviously wrong.
Let's do a couple different scenarios here. So let's say Martin Atkinson said, I didn't see any contact, I think it's a dive. On either one of those two, I think it's a dive.
Yeah. Yeah.
You look at that and you say, well, it's definitely, I don't think it's a dive, right?
Yeah.
Would you then say, okay, that's a penalty?
There's a difference between it not being a dive and it being a penalty.
Okay.
You know, football's a contact sport. And when it's in a penalty area, especially corner kicks people look at, this is a situation where you've got, what, 8 people in a very small area. Four of those attackers. So there's going to be some bodily contact. A defender's job is to stop the attacker scoring a goal. There's going to be contact with the body. Of course there is. It's whether they do that fairly. In that situation, Martin's actually looking at the player. He's looking at Bertrand. So he can see if Bertrand's actually watching the ball or looking at the player. If he just runs into the player, then there's a difference. If Martin says to me there, I'm comfortable, you know, that this is what I've seen, and I can look and think, the pictures that I might disagree whether it's a penalty or not, but what he's telling me he's seen happened.
Okay.
So therefore, it's not clearly and obviously wrong. It's just I interpret it different to him.
Okay.
Clear and obvious has got to be one where everybody looks at it and goes, that's a pen.
It's unanimous.
And I don't think everybody would look at that and go, that's a clear penalty kick. Take away the West Ham, Southampton supporters.
Yeah, sure.
Clearly on either side of that.
Sure.
I think people would look. I think it's one of those that you'd put in the category of, I've seen it given. And if it's in a category of, I've seen it given, it's not clear and obvious.
Okay. And I'm guessing, I think I know your answer to this, but let's say Martin Atkinson points to the spot, he says penalty, you check it.
Yeah.
You're going to stick with that decision then?
Absolutely, correct? Because it's not clearly and obviously incorrect.
Okay.
Again, so this is where people will, you know, question this system, because if he doesn't give a penalty there, I'm going to say, yeah, I'm going to support that. If he gives a penalty, I'm also going to say I'm going to support that, because neither one of those would be clearly and obviously incorrect in my opinion. So as long as there's logic to Martin's thinking of not giving that or giving it, then I can't go against that. So yeah, I would say that that's.
And I don't know that many people knew that it comes down to, a lot of it comes down to what the referee's actually telling you at Stockley Park. Like, you're listening to him. If he says, I haven't seen it.
Yep.
So I don't know actually what happened. I just saw, obviously he's going to be, that's the area of the pitch that the referee's going to be looking at anyway. But if for some reason he says, I haven't seen that, we're reviewing it. And then it solely goes into your hands. You're going to say, nah, I don't think there's enough there. I'm okay with the decision on the field.
Yep.
Okay.
This to me is a perfect example that if I, as VAR, said to Martin, because it is a good shout for a penalty kick, if it's given, I don't think anybody complains. I think if you say to Martin there, because I honestly think Martin sees this fully and just doesn't think it's a penalty. I don't think he's misread it.
Yeah.
So if I, as VAR, say to Martin, go to the side of the pitch and check, everybody's thinking he's going to give a penalty. He has to do. The VAR's told him to go check it. If he goes to the side of the pitch, he's going to see exactly what he saw. He's not going to see anything different. He's then under pressure to think, well, this is what I haven't given a penalty for, so why would I change my mind? But there's also an element of arrogance that people will perceive if you look over and go, no, I'm happy, it's just a goal kick. So the referee can't win in that situation. He either looks arrogant by sticking with his own decision, or he changes his mind on something that he actually still believes is, he's actually giving what he thinks is a wrong decision because he's been pressurized into that. So this is, I think, a good argument, a situation like this, where a VAR in a, you know, neutral room will look and go, do you know what, Martin? No problem with that at all. Happy with that.
Okay.
So yeah.
I think that was very interesting, and I think people will get a kick out of that, because it's something that we don't get to see. So I think that was awesome. Now, you could have won some West Ham fans over if you would have said, that's probably a penalty, but, you know, I won't blame you for that. It's okay. I put out a tweet for some questions. I am running out of time here, so I'm going to try to just ask a couple of these, and if I don't read your question, I apologize for that. But I have two here that I want to read out. The first one here is from Rob at Old Thinker Tube, and he says, this is a good question, what's the threshold for when dissent warrants a yellow card? Is it only to prevent intimidation that might influence the official? Shouldn't we also book the lads who pretend to tear their hair out like they've never been so mind-blown in all their lives? What is your views on dissent?
Yeah, I think the skill in dissent is knowing when it's somebody who's physically questioning your decision and questioning your authority and somebody who's just frustrated. So naturally, when you give a decision against somebody and they don't feel that you're right, they're going to show, you have to have empathy. They're going to show a little bit of frustration in that. It's when they start throwing their arms, it's visual. When they start saying certain words that you think, wait a minute, that's crossed a line. It's starting to throw the ball away, kick the ball away. Those are the things where we can actually say, that's enough, stop now. Again, take away the cameras, there'd be no real question on this. Refereeing in the Premier League, actually, you get less dissent than in any level I've ever refereed at in England.
Sure.
It's a skill. We've got to have an understanding that a decision that a player disagrees with, they've got to be allowed to disagree. You know, you can't expect them just to bow their head and say thank you. Element of that, because footballs, they're under pressure. So we have empathy. But there is a line. Each referee's line is going to be in a different place. Again, that's what causes problems. I have quite a high, you know, threshold in
terms
of that.
Have you sent anyone off in the Premier League for dissent?
I've never sent, not in professional football, I've never actually sent anybody off directly for
second yellows, comment. Maybe?
Second yellow, yeah, probably a couple, but none that I can think of. Again, I probably even raise my threshold that little bit more.
Sure, on a yellow, I'm sure.
Right or wrong, but, you know.
Because you don't want to change the game because of yourself, right?
If it's something I feel I can manage, someone calls me something that I take offence to, fine. But if it's something that I go, wait a minute, I can understand why Teddy's been thrown out the pram a little bit here, I'll try and manage that. If they don't want to listen to me, then fine, off you go. Not my problem anymore.
Okay.
So, yeah, the thresholds are different.
Okay. The next one here is from Merrick at Not Merrick. And he asked, do you think the refs are applying VAR in such a way to make the old system look better for fans and want to go back almost as an I told you so?
Oh, that's a good question. no, look, as a referee, I would want every single piece of technology that can help me.
You guys wanted it.
Of course we do.
You wanted the help, right?
We want the help. How that help comes about is changing football, but West Ham Bournemouth, I wanted the help that day. With VAR, I would absolutely have dreamed of having VAR that day. I would have got a red card correct for Francis. I would have disallowed a goal for handball.
Yeah.
Everybody's happy. Nobody's talking about me. Refs don't want people talking about them. So, no, I don't think it's a matter of going back to the old system. They're working their best that they possibly can with a system that is causing a little bit of controversy because it's taking things to the nth degree, and that's not what refereeing and football is about, nor is it what anybody wants.
Okay. The next one here is from Craig Potovin. I hope I pronounced your surname right. And his Twitter handle's at Craig Potovin. And he says, great podcast to join. Thank you very much. He says, it's not really to do with refereeing, but do you have any particular West Ham memory that stands out to you? So let's rule out the ones that we've already talked about, the major ones that you've been a part with. Do you have anyone in your head of just to have where West Ham were playing where you have a memory that sticks out to you?
I think the thing that sticks out more about, I mean, as I said, as a ref, I said to you last time, as a ref, you don't remember good decisions that much. You only remember when you get criticised for. So obviously I could talk about that, but I won't. I think the one thing West Ham that I do have memories of is the old bowling ground, Upton Park, as it was to me.
Yeah.
When you walk out there and there's the bubbles and I'm forever blowing bubbles, there are certain grounds that Liverpool with You'll Never Walk Alone, grounds that have their own identity. I think that identity was lost a little bit when they moved to the new stadium.
It's sad.
But, you know, at the old ground, I was glad I had an opportunity to go and officiate there because that was... West Ham was the first place, as you said last time, the first place that I got to wear a FIFA badge.
Yeah.
You know, as West Ham against Liverpool. So, yeah, some good memories. But for me, passionate fans, hostile environment, certainly the old ground was, and a proper old school stadium and football, English football environment. That's my memory of West Ham.
Yeah, I mean, we not to go into a whole different subject here, but the fans definitely now are beginning to realize how what's the word to describe it? We definitely didn't want to go. Now, if we could go back, I think 99.5 fans would decide they want to go back, especially now that we've just brought David Moyes back in charge. I mean, we thought we were leaving to move on, to push. I mean, if we were where Leicester are or Wolves, hell, even Sheffield United right now. I mean, that's a very extreme example, but we should be pushing to where those clubs are at. And I think if people could trade a season or two or three or four in the championship to go back to the old ground, I think we'd do it, honestly.
There's a lot to be said for older football stadiums.
Totally agree.
Man City, Arsenal, you know, they lose a lot of their, a lot of the
soul.
Yeah, they do a little bit. Yeah.
So the next one here is from the Honest Football Podcast, and they ask, what's the worst professional ground for post-match refreshments? And I'm sure you're not taking in many post-match refreshments around the ground that you just refereed in, but do you have any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, all professional clubs provide some kind of refreshment to referees after the game. I can't think of many bad ones, to be fair. I mean, we don't expect them, so basically we just get a plate of sandwiches and you know, Lucozade or something like that. Usually some of the clubs are obviously better. Some of the clubs will give you the menu before the game and you'll have a sit down meal in your changing room. They'll bring a table in and you sit down and have some food after the game.
Sure.
I do remember an occasion where I think Jose Mourinho was at Chelsea. He came in after the game to speak about whatever, and he looked at the table of refreshments that we had, and usually at Chelsea it's sushi, which I'm not massive on that, but sushi, some sandwiches, and he actually looked and said, what's this? Where's your food? And we said, well, this is the food that you provide us. This is what you give us. And he went mental. He went and he got the chef. He brought the chef to the changing room. Said, this isn't acceptable. Give the referees what they want. Tell him what you want. And
wow.
So again,
he did that for, that was your personal experience?
Yeah. So wow.
That's a good story.
Most clubs all the way through professional football, even that one at Thackley that I produced the other day in the ninth division, they give referees hot food. So referees, and they're not these people clubs just want rid of. They respect the fact that they're officials. They respect the fact that they could have 5-6 hour drive home. So yeah, the refreshments after games always pretty decent from the clubs.
I was expecting you to say Mourinho came in and started throwing the Lucozade bottles around, and I was expecting that story to go in a totally different direction.
Not at all, no.
That's very cool though. I mean, that's awesome. Next one here is from Siren. Is it I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. How do you pronounce this? C-I-A-R-A-N. I know it's a...
Kieran.
Kieran. Okay, it is Kieran.
I have spelling of Kieran, yeah.
Okay. Kieran Poole. Apologies, Kieran. We don't see that name very often over here in the United States. He has two questions. Thoughts on Huddersfield since the Cowleys took over. Big West Ham fans, the Cowley brothers are. And he also asks, the toughest atmosphere you've ever refereed in.
Well, I didn't know they were West Ham fans. I mean, look, sometimes there's an element of new manager, new bounce and whatever else. Huddersfield were going in a direction with previous managers where it was almost play until we don't concede, we might get a point. As soon as you concede, heads dropped. And that comes from playing in the Premier League. You know that you're playing against some of the top teams in the world. So it's hard. You know, they've taken over at a good point when you're back in the Championship, I guess. But they have bounced. They've kept the crowds, which I think is important. There's still over 20,000 at every game at Huddersfield. Playing good football. I watched them against Blackburn yesterday. They played really well. They've come in and done a good job. The hard thing, I think, for managers is to repeat that in the second season. You know, is it just the bounce of what was a really bad period and now it feels like a really good period? Or is it genuinely that they've got something? They've done well in their previous clubs, so why not? You know, they've proven themselves so far lower down, so why not give them that opportunity? The second question was the most hostile?
Yeah, the toughest atmosphere you've ever refereed in. I know you've said on the previous show that you don't really hear a lot of it, but do you have an opinion, toughest atmosphere?
PAOK Thessaloniki in Greece, without a doubt. Difficult place to ref, incredibly passionate fans.
What competition was that in?
I've been three times actually to PAOK, so a Champions League qualifier. I went in a Europa League against Borussia Dortmund, which the atmosphere there was, I've never experienced an atmosphere like it. It's an incredibly intimidating experience. As a referee, you hear every time you give a free kick.
Wow.
Not many grounds you do. There, Galatasaray, Fenerbahce, Turkish teams in general. Yeah. You know, Greece and Turkey are two places where you really, it's not intimidation as such, it's more a massive awareness of the whole arena and atmosphere around you. Not so much in English football. You hear it at Crystal Palace, it's good atmosphere there. You hear it at Newcastle, it's good atmosphere. I can't think of many places in England where you go and it feels volatile or it feels intimidating as such, even Millwall to a degree. Maybe the old Den did, but I never got an opportunity to go there. The new Den, not so much. I can't think of many that's intimidating in England at all.
Got it. And then we'll finish off with this one, non-football related. This one's from Baker Lilovic and Twitter handle at Lilovic Baker. Who are your favorite bands? I know you're a big country music guy we talked about last time. What are your favorite artists?
I love a bit of Brad Paisley. I went to Copenhagen to watch him in October. Brad Paisley, superb. Chris Stapleton at the moment.
Incredible. I love Chris Stapleton.
Unbelievable.
I've seen him live twice now.
Okay.
And sounds identical to the album, if not better in person. I mean, usually when you know someone's going to be just an absolute world beater. Chris Stapleton, I could talk for hours about. Brad Paisley, I was just listening to on my phone as well.
Yeah.
Any other favorites?
I'm a bit old school as well. I mean, I go back Alan Jackson. I probably go back George Strait, George Jones, as far back with Johnny Cash. And just a massive. I was brought up on country by my dad, and I mean, I have a massive, broad spectrum of music that I like.
Sure.
Anything from country to Ocean Colour Scene, a band that I love, an English band. Been to see them many, many times. Superb. Sort of mid-90s are around at the same time as Oasis and sort of Britpop kind of era. Countries sing a little bit of it as well. Not too well, but
I would pay to see that. Whenever I come to Norway at some point, we're going to a karaoke bar or something, and you're going to sing some country karaoke.
I've got some videos of karaoke on my phone, so that they're going to stay there. They're not going on Twitter, but all good, mate.
All right, well, that's about does it. I mean, you gave us over an hour and a half. I think that's incredible. I really appreciate your time. I know you've. This will be your audition for some maybe TV like Sky or the BBC or someone hire you as their referee pundit. Would you go for that if it was available?
I probably would, mate. Yeah, I mean, I think there's enough talk about it at the moment. And if I'm going to blow my own trumpet in that sense and try and sell myself, I actually think a lot of ex-referees talk about VAR, but they don't really have any personal experience to be able to discuss that. Whereas I've been through all that. I've been through the whole process with the Premier League guys. I'm still close to those guys. I'm in touch with Premier League football. So, in that sense, I do feel I have something to offer to broadcasters, not to slate referees or slate decisions, but just to open that, open fans' eyes. Hopefully that's done that a little bit tonight.
Yeah.
And just give a different insight, a different angle on refereeing as such. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, I still want to carry on refereeing. I still have ambition in that. But, yeah, I am considering, you know, making that move and broadening that out into media a little bit if anyone wants to come along and have a chat. But
yeah, I'll send your contact information their way. I have tons of contacts in the media good game, man, so, yeah, I'll send them your way. Well, we really appreciate it. Tony sends his regards. He couldn't join us this week for the interview again. I guess he's just dodging you. I don't know, but he sends
personal.
His regards.
Yeah, personal.
Yeah. He can't get over the Bournemouth game, I guess. Nope. So we'll have to do this again. I'm sure probably at the end of the season, I'd probably like to do it again and probably go over VAR again, but we'll do that. But until then, thank you so much, and we'll see you later.
Cheers, man. Take care.
Once again, thank you so much to Bobby Madley for joining us this week. Again, for interviews-wise, that's my favorite one I've ever done because I think I learned a whole lot. I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I did doing it. And he said he'd come on again at the end of the season to discuss where we're at and the things going forward. So let me know what you thought about it. Send your tweets to @WestHamWayUSPod. Let me know what you thought about the interview because, for me, I think knowledge-wise and learning-wise, it's probably my favorite one I've ever done. That being said, West Ham did play two games this week, and we won both of them. David Moyes' first game in charge. How about that? Against Bournemouth, a 4-0 victory. Tony was actually in attendance for the game. I wish he was here to talk about the game and the experience that he had at the London Stadium. But for me, the best performance I've seen in quite some time. Now, let's not kid ourselves. Bournemouth were shocking. I mean, they were horrendous. Probably the worst opposition we've seen in some time this season, and they're in a mess right now, Bournemouth. I mean, they looked like us earlier in the season when we still had Pellegrini in charge. So, but nonetheless, we scored four goals. Mark Noble scoring twice, Sebastian Allaire scoring, and then what do you know, Felipe Anderson scoring his first of the season. Nice to see him get on the score sheet. David Moyes, I'm not sure how much credit I can give him for this game, and I think he even said he deflects all the credit away from him and onto the players because he only had two or three days in charge of them before Bournemouth. So, but nonetheless, good to get the new manager bounce. Good to get players fighting for the shirt again. It looked like everyone was up for the game, and I think the real test to come in the league is when we concede. That's what I'm looking forward to the most, because under Pellegrini, when we conceded, our heads dropped, and it looked like we really stopped trying. So I'm curious to see in the Premier League if in the next game against, I believe, Sheffield United, if we concede, do heads drop, or does David Moyes get the guys going and really lift their spirits and get them fighting again? Because I think we've dropped 15 points from winning positions this season, and that is unacceptable. And I think it's by far and away the most points dropped in the Premier League from winning positions. So good to see. 4-0 win, off to a good start. And then we go to the cup game. Tony also in attendance. Again, I wish he was here to talk about it. Tony also went to three different games on Saturday when West Ham were not playing. So he went to, well, I'll let him tell the games that he went to, but him and our friend Andy went up north. They went to three games in one day, two FA Cup games, I believe, and one either League Two or League One. I'm not sure. Again, I'm going to let Tony explain all of that when he comes back. So I wish he was here to discuss all of this stuff with you guys because I think it's really interesting. But we'll save that for next week. But on to the Gillingham game. First half was dreadful, right? I mean, nothing really to speak of from a West Ham's perspective going forward. Now, Fabianski had a few okay saves, but we really offered nothing. And again, hopefully this is a sign of good things, but in the second half, we come out ready to play. Hopefully David Moyes lit a fire under their asses, and they came out. They scored fairly early on in the half. Sebastian Allaire missed an absolute golden chance right off the hop in the first half, the second half. And the pitch was bobbling. I think he'll blame the pitch. And in his defense, the ball was bouncing when he struck it from an uneven pitch. But nonetheless, we get to see Pablo Zabaleta come on. Unfortunately, Fredericks got injured, but Zab comes on, gets his first goal as a West Ham player. And we'll have to tweet out the link of the highlight, but you can actually see Tony behind the goal. Luckily, he's wearing like a light gray or a white sweatshirt, so he sticks out like a sore thumb about four or five rows up. But when Zabaleta scores that goal, you can see Tony jumping up and down and then sprinting down the stairs to celebrate with the players. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then Pablo Fornals comes on also, two substitutes scoring, both named Pablo. And Fornals buries it to seal it late on in the game, and we win 2-0. And I tell you what, I would rather win ugly like that under David Moyes than lose in the cups that we've... I mean, I think that goes without saying, and that's probably dumb of me to say, but I would rather play like Moyes and have a better shot at winning than Pellegrini and have a very high chance of conceding a bunch of goals and losing. So I got to see all the things that I wanted to see from West Ham. So they were under the pressure a little bit in the first half, but they came through it. And then in the second half, they buried them. So that's all you can ask for, really. And David Moyes takes some credit for this game because he played three at the back, well, really five at the back, with Masuaku and Fredericks playing wing backs. And then for me, the midfield was being overrun, and we didn't have enough midfielders in there. He did change that, especially when Fornals came on. I thought it really changed things. And we saw the game out, and at the end of the day, we're in the hat for the fourth round. The draw is actually coming up here in a few hours, so by the time you're listening to this, you will probably already know who we're playing. Hopefully, if it were me, I would love to see us play Millwall. I know that's the obvious one. That's what everyone says. But that would be pretty special to be able to play Millwall again. And hopefully we get a good draw, and then we're on to the fourth round. So I think that about does it for this week. It's been a long one. Again, apologies for Tony not being here, and apologies for having to listen to me ramble on for a few minutes. But like I said before, I hope you really enjoyed the Bobby Madley interview, and we will be back next week with a regular episode for you. Tony's going to break down his trip across the pond and tell you about all the games he went to. And I will probably have some more things to ramble on about, which I'm sure you guys are thrilled with. And yeah, that'll do it this week, guys. Again, you can follow us on Twitter at West Ham Way US Pod. You can send us an email if you want to, if you have any questions or you want to submit some feedback. You can send that to the West Ham Way USA Podcast at gmail.com or just West Ham Way USA Podcast at gmail.com. They go to the same email address. And if you would, please go on to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. It really means a lot to us if you do that. Helps us get in more people's ear holes, and really at the end of the day, that's all we're trying to do. So again, for this week, that's it, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next week. Irons!